Good afternoon. Thank you all for being here today. What I'm going to present to you today is a snapshot of the middle, well, what should be the end of growing season two, but we actually, I was out collecting last week as well, so we still have some forages in our freezers. We have forages kind of coming through. So this is kind of a snapshot, but we've got a lot of statistical differences, so I wanted to go ahead and present this today. Basically, silvopasture is a viable option that people are moving towards in order to kind of mitigate some of these environmental issues that we have. This can include things such as overland flow and loss of nutrients out of agricultural production fields. This can include, you know, leaching losses of nutrients that can be mitigated through the use of root interception with multiple types of crops in the same system. We have recently topped over 7 billion people with the world's population, and so we need to find ways to more sustainably produce products such as food and fiber. We are also dealing with land base that is diminishing. As more people are in the world, we're running out of land base to, you know, that's agricultural-based land that we can use to produce stuff. Silvopasture is a specific type of agroforestry that combines trees with an alley cropping. It can be forages, it can be various other types of crops. For the purposes of this research, we're looking at forages and grazing animals underneath loblolly pines specifically. This picture on the left shows, this is not where we are at, but this is a picture taken out of Louisiana in a silvopasture, and I wanted to put this up there just to demonstrate how through the use of this production system you can experience a diversification of your income sources. You have the timber rows that provide a long-term source of income for the producer. You also have the grazing animals that provide an annual income to the producer as well. On the right, this shows a picture by the Texas Water Development Board of the state of Texas. And if you look over on the eastern portion of the state of Texas in the Upper Gulf Coastal Plain, we have a lot of sensitive watersheds in this area as well. There's a lot of studies being done on how to minimize these water quality issues that we have in East Texas. Silvopasture is one possible way that we can reduce some of these quality issues. Additionally, silvopasture has been shown to increase the quality of both warm and cool season grasses, and it's also been shown to increase animal health and production in these systems. The shade provides moderation of the microclimate. Cows, especially if you picture, you know, Black Angus cows in the summer and they're in an open pasture with coastal hay, they're standing under a shade tree if there's one available, and they're compacting the soil, they're not moving around, they're not eating. The first limitation to productivity is going to be consumption of that forage. So there's multiple ways that you can increase that animal production. Animals, especially cows, cattle, grazing cattle, they use a lot of energy trying to cool themselves. If they are not using that energy trying to cool themselves as much, then they can then devote that energy to average daily gains into more production, which means more money for the producer. The purpose of this research, the overall general purpose, was just to determine if several warm season grasses that we had available in East Texas would be a productive input for a silvopasture system. Specifically, we wanted to look at the effects of species and cultivar on yield and quality of 7 forage types produced in a simulated silvopasture, and then we wanted to look at the effects of 50% shading on the yield and quality of 7 forage types produced in a simulated silvopasture. The 50% shading is a rough average between the amounts of shading that you see as the trees mature and their canopy begins to close. 50% was a good basic number where we could increase our replications and keep that at a stable level. The Woden soil series is a soil type that was used in this study. This is a marginally productive soil type. It's highly weathered. These are acidic soils, and they're coarse in nature. They have low organic matter. The picture on the top, on y'all's top right, the field preparation picture, shows just after the field was disc. So you can see there's really not any organic matter in that at all. So this is classic of what producers in the area are dealing with. They have, you know, soils like this. We started all of the plants for this project in plugs in a greenhouse. 5 of my forages are native grasses, and they are known to take 2 years to establish. And so in order to bypass that 2-year establishment period, we started them in the plugs in the greenhouse. And as they developed and their roots became sufficient, We then transplanted them into the field. They were transplanted at a rate of 3 plugs per linear foot, and this gave us 48 plugs per plot. After they were put into the ground, we watered them in just the one day that we planted them. There was no irrigation after that initial day of planting. We had 6 replications also in part because we had been dealing with a really bad drought and we were concerned about having to apply irrigation in order to save the project. We have not had to do that yet, so that's going to give us year 3, which I'll get to in a minute, where we'll be able to split those and look at a clipping frequency. But the individuals' wood-flatted shade structures were created specifically so that they could provide an intermittent shade source. Some people use shade cloth to determine light reduction and to see the response of that. What we have found at SFA, another student actually looked at this too, is that the shade cloth might be advertised at 50%, but over time when you stretch it or put it on a structure, it's not actually shading at 50%. It's too variable and you can't really get a good grip on that. Also, that difference between the intermittent shade and the solid shading source has shown to create morphological differences in the plant, such as stem elongation. The study specifically that I looked at was with alfalfa. But in order to make this a non-issue, we went with wood slats. The PVC pipe on the end, we put that together and we attached the corners with side outlet elbows. And I just drilled the tops out of all the elbows so that when I go in and harvest the plots, I'm usually alone, so I can flip them back by myself, I can cut the plants down, and then I can lower the lids and then lower the top so that they remain roughly 1 foot above the top of the canopy. And this controls your incidental light, and it controls, you want to make it where you have your airflow and everything as would be in the field as much as possible. On the bottom left, this shows the sampling area. Each plot was 1.2 meters squared, roughly, or 4 by 4 feet squared, and there's the outer foot of each plot served as an additional buffer area. The very middle 2 feet squared is what was collected for the sample, and they were collected based on the procedures described to producers on how to manage for these types of plants. In other words, when they reached a roughly 2 feet of height, it was recommended that the producer would then go and graze them down to roughly 8 inches for my native grasses and roughly 4 inches for any of the non-natives that are in this study, and I'll get to those in a minute. And so, this shows the plots, the 2 pictures at the top and the one on the small inset one on the bottom right without the grasses in the middle. This is from growing season 1. We determined that during that time, we decided it would be better to facilitate more water competition. And so we allowed this mixed warm season grass in the area already to fill the alleyways, and we tended it and just encouraged them to grow into the alleyways to extend some of that water competition. We don't have trees in this system, so there is going to be a difference in that water competition. Initially, I collected soil samples to characterize the nutrient status and determine what fertilizers to apply and what amendments. And then I took those samples to the Stephen F. Austin State University Soil Plant Water Analysis Laboratory and had those examined. They have standard fertilizer recommendation rates that they give to producers, and our primary goal is to encourage producers in this region to trust this system of production and consider moving toward it. So I'm trying to follow as closely as possible the recommendations that they're dealing with on a daily basis. As I mentioned, our soils in this area are only marginally productive. We have a lot of rainfall, a lot of temperature, and we have a lot of leaching of those basic cations, your potassiums, calciums. All of these nutrient status levels fell in the low to very low portions. I came in with lime and applied, in order to correct for the acidity, we applied 2,800 kilograms per hectare of ECC80 on lime. I applied nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrients. The nitrogen was applied at planting at 64 kilograms per hectare. The phosphorus was applied as the plots were prepared, along with the potassium and the ironite for my micronutrient source. The ironite was applied just so we would not have any limiting micronutrients, and that was applied just based on the recommendations for gardening that came with the bag of micronutrients. The plots were oriented so that we could make sure that when the sun was coming overhead, we had that intermittent shade. So they were oriented north to south, so that as the sun moved from east to west, you would have your sunshade. This was important for what we were trying to do. Additionally, we made sure that the plots were spaced far enough so that we didn't have shade from one plot striking the other plot. This is a quick demonstration of what we did. I wanted to show that on the top of the structures, the wood slats were made so that they theoretically covered 50% of that top. And by lowering that down to 1 foot above the canopy and controlling that incidental light, we're actually confident that this is about 50%. I went in with a spectroradiometer and scanned the difference in terms of underneath the structures and in the full sunlight and just visually looked at those graphs. There's about a 50% reduction. And then also we examined the light quality in terms of the proportion of your reds and blues and grays. And those were also equal to the sun as well as equal to the adjacent pine tree limbs that I tested to. And we just wanted to look at those and verify that my structures did demonstrate what the plants would be considering. And once again, we've got our middle section that we collect our samples from. And after the samples were cut, the tops were adjusted. The forage is used for this study. We have Cobb Big Blue Stem, Nacogdoches Eastern Gamma Grass, America's Indian Grass, Harrison Florida Paspalum, Alamo Switchgrass, Tifton 85 Bermuda Grass, and Tifton 9 Bahia Grass. I also added a replication of bare mineral plots so that I could address the soil parameters with those plots. Two of these are releases from the East Texas Plant Materials Center that have not been studied in terms of silver pasture, and these include the Nacogdoches, Eastern Gamma Grass, as well as that Harrison, Florida Paspalum. The experimental design is a completely randomized design with 7x2 factors. Blocking was not an option on this site. I specifically went to the area and found a site that would minimize all variation. Our plots, 4 by 4 feet, they're very close together. I'll show you some photographs in a minute to demonstrate that. But those, we have tested, or just looked at these different areas, and there was not a plausible reason to block this field. It's a very small area. It's not the big, we're hand clipping plots. It's not a big machine run thing. We replicated it 6 times. Part of that was because of the drought we were experiencing. And if we have not had to split those, which we have not yet, our plan next year will be to utilize those and split that and look at a clipping frequency. So the forage type was completely randomly assigned to all the plots. The shade structures were randomly distributed within each forage type during spring emergence of 2013. This shows the overview of the plots, and this is to scale. And so each plot is 4 by 4 foot square. And as you move back towards the back, it shows you it just shows you how the shade structures are laid out, and you've got your X's showing which ones were shaded. So for our methods, for our forage analyses, our dry matter yield was determined using a gravimetric method. Ground coverage, we calculated a density grams per cubic centimeter. We had crude protein was analyzed with the Varia Macro Elemental Analyzer, and we determined mineral concentration with nitric acid digestion and ICP analysis. In vitro true digestibility was determined using near-infrared reflectance spectroscopy, and neutral detergent fiber and acid detergent fiber we used the Van Suess methods for that. And we also calculated the total digestible nutrients based on the University of Arkansas equation, and that's specific for warm season grasses. But overall, we had significant differences in everything except for ADF. And the ADF, I believe, was not different this year because we had excessive rainfall. And since the secondary walls do not lay down until the active growth has stopped, we've had an extremely long growing season this year. And so, as I said, I was out cutting last week. And so this, I think, has something to do with the slowing it down. Dry matter yield is going to be suppressed, which is going to increase your crude protein from a dilution effect primarily. The neutral detergent fiber, this has been decreased. This is an estimate of gut fill, so this is a positive thing in terms of forage intake for a cow. The total digestible nutrients, this one's going to reflect those changes in the crude protein, NDF, and ADF. Each forage type, you can see, they are the Tifton 9 outperformed everything we expected that. But some of these native grasses, they performed very similarly to each other. If you look at your gamma grass, your Indian grass, your paspalum, and your switchgrass in terms of dry matter yield. I'm going to go through these quickly. Crude protein, we have crude protein, some of these perform similarly, but if you'll notice, this gamma grass keeps popping up as being a very good input, and we'll get to that as we go on. Gamma grass here also shows the lowest levels of neutral detergent fiber or some of the lowest levels along with that switchgrass, and that neutral detergent fiber is that estimated gut fill, and so it's going to reduce intake. And so gamma grass keeps popping up looking like our good one. ADF, it has lowest levels in your acid or in your gamma grass. Your in vitro true digestibility, however, oddly was not as high in the gamma grass as some of these other values. The higher the in vitro true digestibility in grams per kilogram, the better the forage. So our past bloom and our switchgrass and our blue stem showed high in that. Some of these we've had issues with plot dieouts, and we've had some shortages of, like, some developed later, and we don't have all of our samples in there yet. So our total digestible nutrients, which is commonly used, is going to show that the gamma grass, once again, is one of our top performers. Past bloom and switchgrass are also top performers in this area. Soil temperature, it was reduced by roughly 2 degrees Celsius on our shaded plots for the various forage types. The bare mineral plot was actually reduced closer to 4 degrees Celsius. So in summary, forage types are going to vary in quality regardless of the shade, but shade affected dry matter yield, density, crude protein, NDF, IVTD, TDN, and soil temperature. Soil moisture was excluded because we did not show a difference at that time. Shade moderates the microclimate in the plots and could possibly produce a higher quality forage. And the higher quality could make up for the lack of dry matter yield in terms of for cattle production. Other variables that may affect the results, clipping frequency, year three, I want to look at the clipping frequency of year three and split those and lower the frequency of the clipping. And you can see in these pictures that we're starting to see a decline in some of these heavily clipped plots regardless of shade. So several warm season native grasses may be productive inputs to silvopasture, and then certain recommendations that are given to producers that I followed strictly for the purpose of this seem to be overgeneralized and need to be reevaluated because some of these grasses cannot survive under those clipping regimes. Data for year three will be presented in 2015 and will include everything from years one, the rest of year two, and year three. Questions? Yes, sir.
In your conclusion, you concluded that your yield loss would be offset by the quality.
Think about
it.
Okay, you said that I had stated that the quality of the forage would offset that lack of that dry matter yield, possibly. I sure can. Hold on just a second. You want your dry matter yield? Okay, this is my dry matter yield. This is the average megagram per hectare per harvest. This is not my total yields. And so if you have a reduction of yield, but you also have an increase in your protein and you have more available nutrients, they're more digestible to the animal, they're more easily able to access those nutrients, then, and if they're eating more because of the shade, because of all the other benefits combined, you may actually see more of, you might see more growth than you would expect to see just based on the lack of the yield, if that makes sense. So.
My question was that, for example, in your switchgrass, your yield loss is too huge. Basically, half of the shading.
Mm-hmm.
The other one.
Now, so some of these. That's going to be a tough one, and right now, before I finish the growing season out, I have a lot of switchgrass samples that are going in there, and so I don't want to speculate on what it's going to turn out to be like at the end of this. The landowners, that is an interesting point, though, because it's embedded in culture. They do open pasture, conventional pastures. It's going to be very hard to convince them, hey, accept these lower yields in exchange for this. So one of the things that we want to do next as a follow-up study is take these same plots or take the same area at the East Texas Plant Material Center, even if I can talk them into it, and establish an actual feeding trial and feeding basis and make sure that in a real setting also that these results will carry over. There's trees nearby, and that will be our next step, but we're going to pick basically the top three or four performing forages in order to move on with those. Okay.